Hello, Disney fans, and welcome to the show. My name is Austin Terrace, and I'm joined here today by my wonderful sister, Emma.
Hi, everyone.
Coming up on this episode of Disney Daydream, Fantasmic is back at Hollywood Studios, Bob Chapek plans for layoffs and a hiring freeze, and demand dips for the Galactic Star Cruiser. Later on, we'll give you some price comparisons between Disney and its competitors. So, take a little break in your busy day, and let's start daydreaming. Thank you for joining us again for another episode of the Disney Daydream Podcast. We're happy to be speaking with you. Thanks for taking the time to listen. Just a quick reminder, help us out a lot by leaving a review or rating our show wherever you're listening from. You can follow us on Instagram at Diz Daydream or like our Disney Daydream Podcast Facebook page. All that stuff helps us gain more listeners, and we really, really appreciate that. And if you are a longtime listener and you want to find another way to get involved with our show, you could do so by checking out our Patreon page. That is patreon.com/DisneyDaydream. And our Patreon family are a very, very close-knit group of supporters who contribute a monthly financial donation to help support the workings of the show. They get some perks for doing so. And we even have a donation tier that's $3 a month. So less than the trip to Starbucks or Tim Hortons, or as Emma would go, to Big B. For cheaper than your traditional drink there, you could play a really, really important part in the Disney Daydream Podcast. We are sponsored by those wonderful patrons and not by Daydream Travel Agency anymore. I did just start a new job. So Emma and I are doing remote recording again. I'm coming to all of you from the beautiful city of Madison, Wisconsin. Just started work earlier this week, and I did sign a full focus agreement, so I'm not really allowed to do the side gigs or other jobs that I was able to do in the past. So of course I'm going to honor that. And, you know, not continue to sell Disney trips, but I'm always here and happy to talk and provide you with advice if you're thinking about doing another Disney vacation. So please don't hesitate to reach out. Why don't we hop into our news stories for today? Emma, I wanted to let you lead off here because I figured that you'd be incredibly excited about our first story.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty clear that my favorite nighttime spectacular is Fantasmic. I've been very open about that. And Fantasmic is finally back. I'm so excited, and I can't wait until I get to go see it eventually. I caught the end of it on TikTok Live last week.
The end of the first official night of it coming back?
I don't remember if it was the first night.
I think it wasn't, but the preview night that they had was canceled halfway through due to weather, which was sad. But
yeah, that sucks. But I saw that on TikTok and I cried because it was just all the memories, and I just want to be there so bad. So the show is different than it was before the shutdown, but according to cast members, it's even better than Disneyland's Fantasmic, which is considered to be the best Fantasmic there is. I like Disney World's Fantasmic, but I guess this is supposed to be even better. apparently on opening night, there were people camped out in line before 4:30 p.m. when the shows aren't until 8 and 9:30. They started letting people in by 6:15 and people were seated around 6:30. So let's go over some of the changes to the show. The pre-show music is the same, which is awesome because it's great. The big change is that there's a new section of the show featuring Aladdin, Elsa, Mulan, Pocahontas, and Moana. According to guests, it's a powerful section because of the effects and choreography. And Elsa performs Show Yourself, which is supposed to be very emotional. I absolutely cannot wait to see this because I think that Show Yourself is arguably one of the best Disney songs. And
I agree. And people were raving about the Moana edition too, especially.
Yeah, I heard that too. So not much changed besides that. The dragon is the same and the boat is the same, but it does seem like the boat got a new coat of paint and that they upgraded the lights and lasers because everything was looking really crisp and clean. I can't wait to see if the show lives up to the hype. I'm sure it does. I'm considering taking a solo road trip down to Florida. See it for myself. Take that 18-hour drive.
Are you serious? Doing that?
Oh no, I definitely wouldn't, but I really want to.
I wouldn't put it past you.
Yeah, maybe it'll be like an impulsive decision that I just decide to go. But
yeah, and when you're halfway there, text mom and dad and just be like, "I'll be home in a few days." I'm using some of my Domino's delivery driver money to hit up Orlando for a little bit.
Yep. Perfect.
But that's wonderful. And now it kind of feels like, I don't know, it just didn't feel like Disney was back to pre-pandemic entertainment until Fantasmic returned. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are still some important things that were permanently deleted from around the parks, which is sad. But this is a huge step forward, and it's great that the show's back. It's fun that they ended up adding a few more scenes, and even though they didn't change the final barge at the end, the ship, I don't really think that needed changing. I liked it, and some people were disappointed that the dragon didn't change as well, and I understand like how cool the Disneyland dragon is supposed to be, but I don't know. There's just something special about it. I'm not too upset that they didn't make those adjustments.
Yeah, I'm not either.
And on a different note, heading into a more serious topic, I guess you could say, Bob Chapek is planning for layoffs and a hiring freeze at the Walt Disney Company. Recently, Disney held its Q4 earnings call with shareholders, and the results were underwhelming. Although Disney brought in $162 million in net income and $20.15 billion in total sales, this ended up being about $1 billion short of projections. Disney leadership also shared that they project fiscal revenue and operating income to both grow at high single-digit percentages next year, but analysts were projecting double-digit increases for the company. This led to Disney's worst single-day stock decrease since 2001, and prices dipped below $100 per share for the second time this year. They dipped down actually all the way to $88.50, I believe. In response to this market adjustment and shareholder disappointment, Bob Chapek sent out this memo to leadership in the company. And I'm just going to read it directly so I don't miss anything important or paraphrase incorrectly. Here it is. Quote, "Disney leaders, as we begin fiscal 2023, I want to communicate with you directly about the cost management efforts Christine McCarthy and I referenced on this week's earnings call. These efforts will help us both achieve the important goal of reaching profitability for Disney Plus in fiscal 2024 and make us a more efficient and nimble company overall. This work is occurring against a backdrop of economic uncertainty that all companies in our industry are contending with. While certain macroeconomic factors are out of our control, meeting these goals requires all of us to continue doing our part to manage the things we can control, most notably our costs. You all will have critical roles to play in this effort, and as senior leaders, I know you will get it done. We are not starting this work from scratch and have already set several next steps, which I wanted you to hear about directly from me. First, we have undertaken a rigorous review of the company's content and marketing spending, working with our content leaders and their teams. While we will not sacrifice quality or the strength of our unrivaled synergy machine, we must ensure our investments are both efficient and come with tangible benefits to both audiences and the company. Second, we are limiting headcount additions through a targeted hiring freeze. Hiring for the small subset of the most critical business-driven positions will continue, but all other roles are on hold. Your segment leaders and HR teams have more specific details on how this will apply to your teams. Third, we are reviewing our SG&A costs and have determined that there is room for improved efficiency, as well as an opportunity to transform the organization to be more nimble. The task force will drive this work in partnership with segment teams to achieve both savings and organizational enhancements. As we work through this evaluation process, we will look at every avenue of operations and labor to find savings, and we do anticipate staff reductions as part of this review. In the immediate term, business travel should now be limited to essential trips only. In-person work sessions or offsites requiring travel will need advance approval and review from a member of your executive team. As much as possible, these meetings should be conducted virtually. Attendance at conferences and other external events will also be restricted and require approvals from a member of your executive team. Our transformation is designed to ensure we thrive not just today, but well into the future. And you will hear more from our task force in the coming weeks and months ahead. I'm fully aware that this will be a difficult process for many of you and your teams. We're going to have to make tough and uncomfortable decisions, but that is just what leadership requires. And I thank you in advance for stepping up during this important time. Our company has weathered many challenges during our 100-year anniversary, and I have no doubt we will achieve our goals and create a more nimble company better suited to the environment of tomorrow. Thank you again for your leadership, Bob. Just a couple definitions. SG&A costs that they're trying to trim down, that's selling, general, and administrative costs. It's like everything except production of the content. And then anything else? Yeah, just the whole idea that Disney Plus is still not profitable. And that is not unique to Disney. These streaming services usually aren't profitable until a few years after they're launched because there's so much involved with creating the platform and producing content. It's so ridiculously expensive that they just don't have the revenue from subscriptions to break even until far into the future. And you guys might have noticed they're now going to be introducing a tier of Disney Plus subscription that has advertising. So the traditional no ads, that's going to be more expensive. If you want to come in a little bit cheaper, you can with an ad-supported option. Wow, what a memo, Emma. What a memo.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. I don't know.
After that shareholders like call that they had, people around the financial industry were calling for Bob Chapek to be fired. I think maybe that's to people who listen to our show, and we've covered stories about, you know, cast members and whole groups of Disney fans calling for Bob Chapek to be fired. But people that are like in the financial like trading industry, I think that's kind of a change that's occurring right now.
Yeah,
and
like, yeah,
right, and there are plans in place for the company to react in case a recession occurs within the next few years. Things like going back to increasing park capacity again, doing like a limited discount on tickets, bringing back the annual pass system. So those are some interesting ideas. But I think it's a really confusing and difficult time for Disney right now. In the next half a year or a year, we're really going to see how leadership follows through and reacts. Like, will executives stay the course and double down on the decisions that they've made over the last 2 years? Or does this call necessitate a change in strategy? My guess, after reading that memo and based on Chapek's historical record, they're going to double down on what they've been doing. And I think that because of that, we've only seen the beginning of the price increases and cuts. And I just think that Disney's backed itself into a corner, because right now, in November of 2022, none of their stakeholder groups are satisfied. Like, they have not been able to meet the really aggressive expectations of their shareholders. And on the other side of the coin, they've lost a ton of goodwill amongst their fans. So how are they going to move forward? They need to get the next steps right, because all eyes are on them at this point. And guests have much higher expectations now than they did in the past, because they've increased prices so much. Like, no one is cutting Disney any slack anymore. There was a ton of slack, and rightfully so, cut during 2020 and when the pandemic was surging and when things were closed, but they're on a short leash. Those days are over, and people want incredible amounts of profits on one hand, and guests want some of that, I guess, Disney magic and value back that they haven't been seeing so far. Watch out. We'll see what Bob Chapek does next. It's going to be a roller coaster ride, as it has been since he assumed the CEO position. But Emma, why don't you share some info with us about demand for the Galactic Star Cruiser?
So demand is way down for the Galactic Star Cruiser these days. Some voyages are only booked at 25% capacity. There's an upcoming voyage that only has reservations for 128 guests. The maximum occupancy for the Star Cruiser is 502. That's 25.5%. So due to the low reservation... Yeah, I know. So due to the low reservation rate, cast members are now losing hours, particularly servers. This could result in them losing employees. Maybe they want to go work somewhere where they can get more hours and get paid better.
Or maybe Disney will be like, well, we plan to lay people off anyway.
Yeah. So typically the Star Cruiser has two dinner services, which include the performances during the meals each night. The guests are split between service one and two, but for some of the upcoming cruises, occupancy is so low that they're only doing one service each night. And like, for 128 guests, they're only going to use 10 servers. I don't, it's so dumb. And there have been enough vacancies recently that Disney offered a free 3-day, 2-night stay to travel agents. And honestly, it's unclear what Disney is going to do to help this problem yet. They might add holidays or new plots to try to include more characters, maybe like create some more draw. But honestly, this whole situation doesn't surprise me that much. The Galactic Star Cruiser is kind of a niche trip. Like, you have to be a huge Star Wars fan and willing to spend the money to go on like a virtual cruise. I think it's cool personally.
Yeah, I think it would be fun, but
yeah,
we can't take all of the credit for seeing this coming. We were not the only show to speculate about this, but one of the things that we brought up when they released that price point, you know, like $6,000 for a couple people over a 2-night, 3-day voyage, we were just like, where is there any repeatability at that price point?
Yeah.
Like, is the demand so high that that price is going to be sustainable for this niche experience? Like, you're not creating another product that's similar to Adventures by Disney or a Disney cruise. Even if you can kind of choose your own adventure, I think there's going to be just way too much overlap for people to want to drop that kind of money again. It's kind of like a one and done thing. You saw it, you had your adventure, you did it. Are you going to go back and try to make a whole other host of choices the next time you go? Or is it just not worth that amount of money? Here's what they could try and do: drop prices by 50% and see what happens. Drop prices by 50% and let only the people who are Disney Plus subscribers access that price point. And that's what they've done with Disney Cruising and some Disney World trips so far. They've opened up months where you can secure discounted reservations if you're a Disney Plus subscriber. So they should do the same exact thing here, except you're probably going to have to really heavily discount this experience.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think it's worth it for a lot of people. And maybe Disney overestimated the amount of people willing to pay for this experience. And like Austin was saying, I think it's one of those things where you do it once and you don't feel like you need to do it again. And the majority of people that wanted to do it probably did it right when it opened. So now there aren't many people left willing to pay for it. So I think
they were probably starved for vacation experiences because of COVID. So they did it as soon as they could.
Yeah. And now Disney's just kind of in this position where they have this cool thing, but not enough people want to do it. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And it is cool. They have a really phenomenal model of like great cast member interaction, which is just something that is truly unique to Disney theme park experiences and Disney vacation experiences, but just targeted at something that I think is too narrow because not all Disney fans are Star Wars fans. I think there's still plenty of hardcore Disney fans who have never been on Rise of the Resistance and don't spend any time in Galaxy's Edge because that is not their part of Disney. You know, it feels like a separate property. It's hard to integrate something as enormous as Star Wars and try to fit it into the Disney canon. It's just its own separate living thing. And in a lot of cases, like if you didn't grow up with it, then you're not gonna latch onto it later on in life. And for the people that are young enough to be enjoying the stuff that's coming out on Disney Plus, and like they're a recent Star Wars fan, they probably don't have the expendable income to pay that to go on this. Those are our news stories for today. It's a mixed bag. We'll have to just continue to follow the next moves that Disney makes very closely, especially with Bob Chapek. It's kind of ironic because not too long ago, he was just given a 3-year extension. So somebody thought that was an amazing idea. And then the most recent numbers came out. Yikes. There might be some regret in there a little bit. But our topic for today, how does Disney stack up in terms of price against its competitors? We're going to be doing some price comparisons. That topic is coming right up. Welcome back, everyone. Our topic for today, Disney price comparisons. We're going to price out a few different types of Disney trips you could take and then show you what Disney's competitors would charge for the same type of trip. Before we jump into that, you might be wondering, why is this episode coming out so late? Can't the both of you just stay on a publishing schedule? And I wish that we could. We were thwarted by technology, so we actually record our episodes usually in two parts. We'll do the news, and then we'll take a short break, and then come back to record the topic. And we were locked out of our remote recording platform when we were recording this episode. So we finished up. Some error message occurred. We couldn't get back in. We thought we had lost the entire episode. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. It did actually upload.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to fake create another beginning of the episode, but we could not get back in. So this episode is late. We acknowledge that. And this is attempt number 2 at us getting episode number 66 out to you guys. Please don't accuse me of hating Disney trips by scheduling this topic. That is not the reason why I wanted to do this. However, I do think it is interesting and important now to just lay the groundwork and, you know, take a good look at what the landscape of vacationing is nowadays. So we are going to take an in-depth look at a priced out Disney World trip versus a Universal Orlando trip. We're going to price out a Disney cruise versus a Royal Caribbean cruise. And we're going to end with pricing out an Adventures by Disney trip versus a G Adventures trip, which is the same type of group travel. Now, I know that the products are not identical. I'm not saying that the experience is going to be the same. I'm not saying that any of these options are inherently objectively better than what you're going to get by going with Disney. So that is not what I'm saying. We're just pointing out the different types of trips that are available to you and the prices associated with that. So first off, let's price out Disney World versus Universal Orlando. I chose May just because May is a month that is not super peak. It's also not a month that is considered a value month anymore, especially towards the end of May once schools start to go on summer vacation. So if you're looking to travel in 2023 to Disney World and you are a family of four, if you want to go May 21st through the 26th and stay for 5 nights, you could book a deluxe studio at Saratoga Springs. Don't hate on this resort anymore. The rooms were renovated last year. Saratoga Springs is looking pretty nice right now. It's still priced as one of the cheapest deluxe options, but the rooms are refreshed and they look good. So for a family of four, and if you add on 4-day park tickets with the park hopper option, you're going to be paying $5,510. For the same length trip at Universal Orlando, you could stay for 5 nights in a Waterview 2 queen bedroom at the Loews Royal Pacific Resort. That is a resort that's considered deluxe by Universal standards. Same family size, 4-day park-to-park tickets, which basically means park hopper, but they don't have the same hour restrictions, so you can park hop whenever you want. You don't have to wait for the afternoon. That price is going to come out to $3,720. Okay, so $5,510 for a lower-end deluxe resort at Disney for 5 nights, $3,720 for a deluxe at Universal for 5 nights. Is that egregious? Maybe not. We don't talk about specifics at Universal very much. I don't think Emma or I would consider ourselves to be super well-versed in the Universal Orlando theme parks or resorts.
No, definitely not.
No. However, if we do like a like-for-like comparison, I would give the best deluxe resorts at Disney the edge over Universal's. However, Universal now has 3 deluxe properties. They got Portofino Bay. They have the one that I just priced out for you, which is the Royal Pacific Resort, and then they have the Hard Rock Resort. And I would consider all three of those to be in Disney's deluxe category. I might not put them as the best, but they definitely deserve to be in that category. The other thing that is important to point out when you're doing this type of comparison is if you book a deluxe resort vacation package with Universal, they're going to give you complimentary, unlimited express passes for everybody. This is a huge benefit to staying at Universal Orlando's deluxe resorts. All right, these passes would typically cost between $100 and $150 per person per day. If you think that's an insane price point, it is. But Universal Express Pass is just loved across the board, because when you buy this, you walk on to everything that you want to walk on to. there are two different tiers. You could do the unlimited express pass where you could just like ride the same e-ticket attraction over and over and over again. There's no limit to how much you can ride. Or you could do what is a little bit more similar to like a Disney fast pass type of thing where you get one ride on each of those attractions. Is it better than what Disney is offering? Yes, very much so. But traditionally, you'd have to pay a crap ton of money for it. And Disney is charging still, you know, around like $20 a day if you want to add on Genie Plus. That is a lot different than $100 to $150 per day. With all that said, there's still like a $2,000 difference in price. So you're getting a Universal Deluxe. You're doing the same amount of days in the parks. You can do a park hopper. You have unlimited express pass. So the times you're going to be waiting in line, it's going to be negligible. 5 to 10 minutes per attraction, even the most extravagant attractions. If you wanted to kind of up your stay at Universal Orlando and pay that $5,500, you could basically extend your vacation to 7 nights, or you could upgrade to the Portofino Bay Hotel and stay in a suite. The Portofino Bay is one that I really want to try. From looking at a few pictures, the rooms could use a little bit of a refurbishment, but it is this gorgeous Italian-like village. It just looks really pretty. It's like you could ride a gondola through there. It just looks like the theming is really on a high level. So there we go. Disney World, $5,500, the same type of trip with Express Pass at Universal Orlando, $3,720. But Emma, I think that it's important here to recognize that with Universal's theme parks, you have to be a person that enjoys the more thrilling types of attractions to really make the most of that. Like if you want that Universal Express Pass, you want to try everything, you're going to be riding a lot of thrilling attractions.
Right.
And for some people, that's just never going to be comfortable for them.
Yeah, like personally, I'm not a huge roller coaster fan. I like the rides at Disney except Rock and Roller Coaster. That's like about my extent of thrill. But
yeah.
If you go to Universal, you really have to either be into the thrill rides or the simulation rides. That's like their two main things. They don't have...
Yep. You really need to be able to handle those attractions with a lot of screens and 3D stuff.
Yeah.
Those attractions that have a ton of 3D stuff and a bunch of screens, that's not what I tend to enjoy the most either.
Yeah, same.
Disney knows that there's a large segment of the population that isn't either interested in Universal's IP in the same way they're interested in Disney's IP. And they also know that there's a lot of people that will never enjoy Universal's attractions the way that they enjoy Disney's. So they can price accordingly because of that. And that's a big difference maker. So there we go. Again, we're not assessing value like this is better than this. We're just making you aware of variations in price during this episode. So Emma, take us through a couple cruise options.
Okay, so starting off with the Disney Cruise Line, you can get a cruise with 2 adults and 2 kids. You can stay in a deluxe Ocean View stateroom. Those rooms have a queen bed, a single convertible sofa, an upper berth single pull-down bed, a split bathroom, a rectangle tub with shower, and 2 small portholes. So that's the room. You can do a 5-day cruise. Day 1, you leave from Miami. Day 2, you go to Nassau in the Bahamas. Basically, you can explore Nassau. Day 3 is Castaway Key, which is Disney's private island. They have a lot of like excursions there and beaches. Day four is the day at sea, and then day five, you disembark in Miami. So you can get all of that for the price of $4,713, about. I mean, if you think about it, that's pretty good for like an ocean view stateroom. But again, you don't have the veranda, you don't have a balcony. So, and there are just two small portholes. So I don't know. Not everyone is a big fan of that.
Yeah. Think about the comparison though between cruise prices nowadays and like a Disney World stay.
Right. Yeah.
That's something that we pointed out on our podcast before. Like, they're becoming more equivalent than they ever used to be. And you have to consider the fact that you're not going to be paying for your meals when you're on a Disney cruise.
Yeah.
Unless you want to make those like Palo reservations, or you're ordering alcoholic beverages at dinner during the evening. But that can potentially be a huge savings for a family.
Yeah. So yeah, that is priced for the beginning of June. Now, if we look at Royal Caribbean for the beginning of June, two adults and two kids again, you can get a grand suite, which has a bedroom and a separate living area. So it's another 5-day cruise. You leave from Miami. Then there's Perfect Day at Coco Key. And that's basically Royal Caribbean's equivalent to Castaway Key. They have a water park there, like a pool with a swim-up bar. They offer a lot of things there. Then day three is at Nassau in the Bahamas, so the same as the Disney cruise. Day four is the day at sea. And then day five, you disembark in Miami. So basically, it's the same type of cruise. And you can get all of that for about $4,892. So it's a very similar price. The main difference here is that you can get a grand suite, which gives you so much more space than an ocean view stateroom. Like, you have the space, you have the balcony. Really, I mean, that's the main difference, but I think that's a huge difference, personally.
Yeah, grand suite.
Yeah.
That's something that's really nice. So if we're trying to do like that value comparison, my go-to, if people are wondering, should I take a Disney cruise? I always say, if you're interested in the ships, if you like Disney, you like Disney's entertainment, you like their themed dining. If you're interested in the ships, go to Disney.
Yeah.
If you're interested primarily in the ports and you're not wanting to spend as much time on the ships, then I think other cruise lines are great options, because mm-hmm. you can still have a lot of fun and you don't feel guilty about spending so much money and then not seeing all the parts of the ship.
Right.
But that's just how I kind of think about it. When I think about the cruises I want to do on Disney, they're all like shorter cruises that just allow me to get on the ships and see the different ships.
Yeah.
I'm not even thinking or really caring about the ports at all, besides Castaway Key, because
yeah,
it's a really fun place. But I'm not doing the Disney option because I want to sightsee. I'm doing the Disney option because I want to experience Disney theming, but on a cruise ship.
Yeah. Something I forgot to mention, the Disney cruise is for the magic, and the Royal Caribbean cruise is for Freedom of the Seas. So those are the different ships.
Sounds good. All right, so we did Disney World and Universal. We just covered Disney Cruise Line and Royal Caribbean. What about group travel? Something that not a lot of people have done. This is a sliver of the Disney vacationing community, but an important one. And if you do want to have some authentic cultural experiences and see the world, it's something that you might want to have in your back pocket or consider someday. So, first up, take a listen here. Adventure by Disney's Greece Adventure Trip. 10 days, 20 included meals, visits to 23 sites. Here's the description. Quote, journey into the cradle of Western civilization for an odyssey through some of the most historic sites in the world. From ancient fortresses atop stark cliffs overlooking the deep azure of the Aegean Sea to quaint villages with whitewashed houses nestled in the verdant hills, you'll bask in the timeless beauty that is Greece. You're going to visit Athens, Santorini, Heraklion, and Olonda. Not sure if I'm pronouncing those last two cities the right way. Apologies. Highlights include an Acropolis tour, Santorini private boat excursion, Temple of Poseidon tour, Aegean Sea swim in natural springs, volcano hike, a Vulcan winery trip, archaeological site of Akrotini, cheese pie making, tzatziki making, Palace of Knossos tour, and Cretan Mountain Village Walk. The Cretan Mountain Village Walk, I think that is, if you go to Greece and you post on Instagram, that's what you're posting.
Yeah.
The pictures from that village where you can see the Aegean Sea. Yeah, that's it. Here's the cost, though. $7,000 per adult, $6,500 per child. So for your family of four, $27,000. There we go.
Oh.
But you have a once-in-a-lifetime Greek experience.
yeah.
Still.
I mean,
sticker shock.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would really love to go to Greece. I have friends from school studying abroad in Greece right now, and all the pictures they've been posting are just ridiculously beautiful. But that is a lot of money.
27 grand on 10 days does not include your flights.
Right.
And it includes like one meal a day. So there's the food cost too. However, we'll talk a little bit more specifics after I give you the comparison to G Adventures, which is a small group travel company. It's been around for 30 years. I know not a lot of people will be familiar with group travel companies, but here we go. I'm going to price out the same-ish type of trip. With a similar itinerary, you could consider the G Adventures Highlights of the Greek Islands tour. Here is that description. Quote, paradise lovers and beach enthusiasts, this one's for you. 8 days island hopping from Athens to the most incredible destinations in the Greek islands, ending in Santorini. Ancient sun-bleached ruins, piercing blue skies in the balmy Aegean Sea provide the stunning natural backdrop for this trip that's packed with culture, local music, tasty cuisine, and activities for the mind, body, and soul. Destinations you'll see: Athens, Tinos, Mykonos, Naxos, and Santorini. Highlights include an island tour of Tinos, Temple of Apollo visit, caldera walk in Santorini. Oh, that's the one. Okay, that is the really classic Instagram spot. Mm. But I'm pretty sure that the Cretan Mountain Village Walk would be basically the same thing.
Yeah, probably the same.
You'd probably be posting pictures of that too. You get a day tour in Mykonos and an orientation walk in Naxos. Cost, $1,900 per person for a total of $7,600 for a family of four.
So,
$7,600, $27,000.
So that's like the same price as one adult for the Disney one for a family of four.
Yeah. Yeah. This though is the most important to point out the differences in value, because I don't want to be like, I don't want to say that these are similar products, even though they're traveling to the same country. Without a doubt, Adventures by Disney is the more luxurious trip. Their trips include more included meals. They'll get you on exclusive tours and itineraries. Like you'll do things on Adventures by Disney that you can't buy anywhere else. It's not like publicly offered or for sale. Every trip has two dedicated adventure guides that provide exceptional service. And you're staying in luxury resorts. So whatever the Four Seasons equivalent is in that country, you can bet that you're going to stay in it. Some of the best hotels in the world. on that G Adventures trip, whatever the Greek equivalent of a Holiday Inn is, that's where you'd be staying. So it's adequate. It's not luxurious. G Adventures typically caters to younger people who don't have kids. I'm not saying that kids never go on these trips, but it's definitely like a, hey, I'm in my late 20s or 30s and I want to get out and like see a few countries and explore the world. And it also caters to some people who don't want the itinerary to be packed. They want to enjoy some more individualized or unstructured time during your trip. So you're not going to have like activity after activity. You're basically going to get one activity in each city. And then your guide can suggest a few alternatives, or you can plan some extra things to do on your own. So there's plenty of room in the schedule to do your own thing. That makes it a lot different than Adventures by Disney. But still, 27,000 versus less than 8,000, that's crazy. That is such a huge difference.
Yeah.
And listen to this. This blew my mind. If you wanted to attempt to spend that much money on G Adventures, you could book the Great South American Journey, which includes visits to Bolivia, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, Peru, Uruguay, and 3 nights in the Amazonian jungle over the course of 65 days for the same price. You could like go through 7 countries and see almost an entire continent for over 2 months for the same price.
Wow.
Maybe I'm crazy, but those are like the kinds of trips that I want to do.
I was going to say, why would you want to go on a trip that long? Like,
I mean, because I feel like getting to some of these places is rather difficult.
Yeah.
And I would feel so much more comfortable in places that I don't know and can't necessarily speak the language if I'm with a group of people.
Yeah.
And it just seems like something like that is once in a lifetime. Like, hey, I'm going off. I'll be back in 2 months, but I'm going to see like the entire continent of South America.
Yeah. Plus, if you're already there, might as well do it all at the same time. Just go to all the countries.
Right. So there we go. That last comparison, ABD and G Adventures. Again, we didn't do this episode in this topic to say that, hey, Disney's charging way too much for their product. Like, that is totally on you to decide for your traveling party and family. Like, do I prefer Disney World's product to Universal Orlando's? Yes. Do I prefer Disney Cruise Line's product to Royal Caribbean's? Yes. Do I prefer it for $2,000 more? Like, maybe. In some situations, yes. But in some situations, maybe not. Or maybe it encourages me one of these times to try something new just to gain that other perspective. So important to, you know, think about when you're making such a huge purchase, like, and this could be your family's one vacation together for the year or for even longer than that. You want to do that due diligence and know what's out there so that you can make the best decision for your family. Anything else, Emma? Any other products we should have considered? River cruises, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I think Disney's just so special. But it's like, are they charging too much? Probably, yes. But like, I feel like the value is accurate. Maybe not like $20,000 more than, I don't know. That's
well,
just
this
like
is the question. I mean, this is like the question of our time right now, thinking about Disney versus other things. We know that we love the product so much. I don't think we've had an experience yet where we've come home and been like, you know what? I really wish that I hadn't gone
yeah,
and spent no. that money. Like, we understand our connection to Disney. We know that we're willing to pay a premium for it.
Yeah.
But it's just like they're testing those boundaries with everybody. It's like, how much of a premium will you accept? Are you going to keep coming back? Because we're going to keep up charging until enough people, who knows what that number is, finally says no.
Yeah.
And we don't know where the limit is.
Right. And it's like, but growing up going to Disney, like, there's that nostalgia factor. And like, it's not like we grew up going on like Royal Caribbean cruises. Like, it's not like we have that emotional connection to it. So I think that
it's
makes
not
us,
like, we grew up really experiencing cruising at all.
Yeah. Like, we've been on one cruise, and well, I've been on one cruise, and like, yeah, I think we're willing to pay for Disney because that's like what it's been our whole lives. Like, that's what we've always wanted to do.
Yeah, it's fair that we want to continue to go back. I'll say this. When Epic Universe opens, I'm taking a Universal Orlando trip.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. I'm going to go to Universal Orlando in early 2024, whatever the heck it is, when that theme park opens. And I'm going to just do it the right way and just, for the first time ever, have a Universal trip experience, just to see what it's like, to be like, okay, can I spend a full day in each of these parks? How is Epic Universe? Is it going to live up to the hype? I just want to know.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you so much for the extended wait. We apologize for the technical difficulties. Hopefully, we have no further issues processing this audio. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Disney Daydream Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll join us for the next one. Remember, be kind to one another and take the time to find a magical moment in each and every day.